And welcome back to the SEC on CBS podcast here on CBS Sports. I am your host, Chip Patterson, and it's time to do some spring footballing. Ben Karcheval has been on the grind at CBSSports.com putting together some spring practice preview material. So we're going to talk about it, taking a look around the country at where some of the biggest storylines are, including down at Auburn, including at Alabama, and including at Michigan, along with what is going on at Texas with Tom Herman and so much more. Make sure that you're subscribed to the SEC on CBS podcast so that you can get episodes first and enjoy Ben Karcheval and spring football. Back here on the SEC on CBS podcast, very happy to have Ben Karcheval here on the show. Ben, happy March, March Madness, which in the college football world is a little less brackety and a little more spring football. There is competition, yes, but it's friendly competition. Not quite the high stakes of the NCAA tournament.
Not quite. And it's also not even, like, full competition, too. Like, we're talking, like, if you got a two deep across the board, like, you're lucky this time of year. Because you got injuries. Your freshman class isn't even fully – unless you're Alabama. You know they had, like, 16 early enrollees or something like that?
Yeah, I mean –
like, they had something super ridiculous, I think.
Well, that's the move, is if you get them on in the spring, then you just get them in the weight program. You get the extra experience. I mean, I get it. This is a good time to let the youngsters ball. And there are a lot of injuries, as you imagined. Enough injuries that I was surprisingly able to write, like, 1,000 words on injured stars. And I was like, wow, that was – I didn't think that we would have that much to talk about, but with Jake Browning, Josh Rosen, basically all of your favorite quarterbacks, including Luke Del Rio, Ben's favorite quarterback, are all going to be out.
Yeah, man, that's my guy. And Sean White, he's hurt too.
Sean White hurt too.
Makes things a little bit interesting at Auburn.
Okay, yeah. So let's start right there because in the SEC, the conversations this spring are going to start and end with the Iron Bowl rivals, because to me, the Jarrett Stidham arrival, something you wrote about, by the way, Ben authored the spring practice storylines, spring practice players to watch. He's killing the spring ball coverage right now over at CBSSports.com, so make sure you check it out. So where are you on Auburn? Because we'll get to Alabama, because I think that Alabama has the spotlight every single year because it's friggin' Alabama, but also because that title game loss was rare. And now we want to see how they respond from it. So first, Auburn, where is your confidence in Jarrett Stidham? And do you think that the belief that this is just going to be his job, I mean, is Sean White still going to get a chance?
Oh, he's going to get a chance, and he should get a chance. So I like Jarrett Stidham's athleticism, and I like his potential. A couple years ago when he played for Baylor, I was covering college football at BR, and my slant was still kind of on the Big 12 a little bit. So I remember his first game as a starter after Seth Russell had that neck injury, and he went and played against Kansas State. I actually have his stats pulled up here. So the kid went in a 31-24 win, because nothing against Snyder's ever easy.
Right.
Like, you might have a better team, but it's never easy. He went 23 of 33, so that's almost 70% of his passes. 419, 3 touchdowns, 0 picks, which on paper you're like, all right, kid's a stud. Well, Kansas State had the worst pass defense in the Big 12 that year. In the Big 12, they had the worst pass defense that year. So, not good. Hit his first reads to Corey Coleman, which, look, I'm not knocking that.
But like, Corey Coleman's pretty good.
Right. If you got Corey Coleman open, you're going to take that every single time. And the coaching staff, their responsibility at that point when you're playing a freshman quarterback is going, all right, we got to get him comfortable without sacrificing, like, the rhythm or the integrity of our offense. So they did a really good job with that. So, but then you go against Oklahoma. It was a loss. He was playing from behind, threw a couple picks. Oklahoma State, he got hurt. Completion percentage was down. Numbers weren't great, but he didn't finish the game. And so then he goes to JUCO, doesn't play for a year. Now he's coming in and getting a lot of first-team reps, and he's presumably going to be the guy to compete against Sean White to start. So the body of work just isn't there for me to get super behind Jarrett Stidham. And I think the thing that he's more athletic and more imposing than Sean White, but I think the thing we overlook with Sean White is in the middle of last year, before he really started to get banged up down the stretch, dude hit his stride.
Yeah.
He wasn't throwing the ball a lot. I mean, their bread and butter was the running game with Petway, but he was not playing bad. He was moving the chains. Now, he's not flashy, but he's not a bad option. It's not like – so if Jarrett Stidham goes in, struggles with the terminology, that doesn't pick up the offense right away, and Sean White exits spring as the number one guy, which I wouldn't be surprised if he does, I don't think that's an alarm. I don't think that's a red flag. I just think Sean White is not as terrible as he's kind of the narrative has been placed on.
Do you think that there's a stigma with Gus Malzahn and quarterbacks, either one way or the other, like the irrational belief that because Cam Newton and Nick Marshall took them to national championship games, that Gus Malzahn should be able to work wonders, or the opposite, that there's also a long list of quarterbacks that provide plenty of evidence that maybe maybe he's not this quarterback whisperer?
I don't put Cam Newton in any kind of category because Cam Newton is
a
his
human.
Own category.
He's a superhuman, yeah.
Yeah, yeah, he's a super – like, I could be the quarterback coach with Cam Newton. I go, man, guys, I did a really good job this year. I need a raise and extension. And
right.
They would go, yes, you do. So I kind of throw Cam Newton out of that conversation. The Nick Marshall thing was a little bit more prevalent to me. Like, he won an NFL-caliber kid – and switched positions, actually. I mean, never started out there or anything like that. Like, that to me was more of the work in progress where you went, all right, you know, that was a kid who really fit the system, had the athletic ability to do what they wanted to do, running the ball and was good enough passing. And you, all right, they really made that work. But since then, I mean, you've gone through Franklin, who's just bad. Jeremy Johnson, bad. Sean White didn't start out great, really. I thought kind of showed some nice development. So I think there's more recent evidence that Malzahn hasn't been this quarterback whisperer. But sometimes you are kind of beholden to what you have. If you just don't have a kid who can read defenses, sometimes you just don't have a kid who can read defenses or can't throw the ball accurately. Sometimes you just can't do much with it. So I think the quarterback competition, if White continues to get better, if Stidham really picks up the offense and looks like a much more complete player by, you know, September or something like that, if he's starting, that's where I think you have a better example of Malzahn really being able to develop a kid. I think you have two really – you have Cam Newton, and then you have a couple guys that are on the total opposite end of the spectrum. So to me, there just hasn't been a lot of middle ground with Malzahn.
Yeah, and that 2013 title game run, now 4 years ago, come this fall. So
yeah.
It's about time. I mean, Auburn fans are sitting around. They're looking at their watch and they're thinking, all right, let's get this together. Let's go win the SEC again. And if they're going to do it, they need to get by Alabama. Now, here is an interesting story that I wanted to pitch your way, and it caught me off guard. I've been immersed pretty deeply in the college hoop scene, and someone can shoot something across my bow. I'm not all defenses up right now when it comes to the college football news. Is it possible that Jalen Hurts gets beat out for the starting job?
Who do you think is going to be him out?
Tagovailoa.
Interesting.
I know, right?
Go ahead.
I was just going to say, somebody pitched that to me, and they were like, yeah, don't be surprised. Like, Jalen Hurts might still have a package or whatever, but Tagovailoa's ability to spin that bean might give him a little bit of an edge, and it's an interesting thing to watch because, listen, Brian Daboll, new offensive coordinator. We talked about it with Dennis Dodd on the podcast here. You just assume that he's going to fall in line with what Saban wants. Like, there's not a lot of Daboll's coaching experience that has me thinking anything other than, okay, he came from the Belichick tree. He fits the basic philosophical principles that Saban wants to have on staff. No, there's not going to be any infighting like we saw with Lane Kiffin. But I think that Jalen Hurts had made some bad mistakes at times passing the ball. And I overlooked him because I was so excited about this superstar that was budding. You know, like I think I called it a slow burn to superstardom. And I've, number one top of Heisman guy to watch next year. And then just last week, somebody saying, I don't know if he's definitely the guy.
So you're totally on about the mistakes. And here's the other thing that masks those mistakes. It's like if he turned the ball over, which he did pretty frequently down the stretch, then it's like, well, they didn't really suffer for it. So it's a little bit easy to overlook. And I remember going to the national championship game against Clemson going like, you know, I just don't know that Hurts is really tearing it up right now. Like, he's obviously still an incredible athlete, and he made that play in the national championship game that very well could have won the game with his legs. But throwing the ball, it wasn't like he was really, really lighting it up and playing his best football there as the season progressed. Here's the thing that makes me think that that idea that he could lose the job is onto something. When Jalen Hurts really took over, when he started and it was very clear that he was going to be the guy and he was the young guy beating out the veterans, is it felt like that was that real changing of the guard moment for Saban. Where everything that he had done with quarterbacks, you had to wait your turn, right? You had to be the senior guy to get out there and play, even if maybe you weren't the most electric player. That changed. That went out the door.
Shout
so
out.
So Saban really now is under this idea. It's like, okay, just because you have the starting experience doesn't necessarily mean that you're the best player for us at that position, that you are going to be the best chance to get us a win, and you've already seen that you can win with a freshman quarterback. That's what leads me to believe that there is some possibility with that he could lose out on the job. Is there's no longer that same old formula for Alabama's offense anymore. Once they realized they could open it up and have a guy run and they could be a freshman, right, it felt like Alabama offensively finally came into that 21st century, and you're wondering why the hell it took him so long to get there, but, you know, better late than never. And now you're going, well, you know, maybe all the rules, maybe throw it out now.
Yeah. I think it's fascinating. You know, here's what I expect about Alabama. I think that next season is going to be a season with immense expectations, and I'm thankful that we are going to learn right off the bat what's up when Alabama and Florida State play in Atlanta, because that game is just incredible. And the fact that we get it on week one as a way to learn so much about each of these potential playoff and national title contenders, like, as a viewer and as somebody that tracks the sport, like, it's just going to be gravy, man. I'm so excited.
And like last year, when we were getting ready to preview season, we did the pod chip, and it was like, what game are you looking forward to most? And I was like, Florida State, Ole Miss, because I really felt like that was going to be the game that we were going to learn the most about as far as the two teams were concerned. And I loved the athleticism on both sides. I was super excited for that game. Like, now take that and multiply it by like 100. Like,
yeah.
It's just you get Alabama and Florida State, and I was super high on Florida State last year. And I look back on it now, and I think, all right, if they can just kind of, you know, they'll get Derwin James back, and if they can just sort of plug in a couple of issues, right, if their pass protection can shore up, they need a big-time guy, wide receiver, to really step up. Like, if they can just tweak a couple of those things, I was like, you know what, last year they were good, they won 10 games. It might have just been a year away, right? They just need a couple of things to take them to that next level. So I'm stoked for that week one game.
Of course, if Florida State is going to get to the college football playoff, that means that they have likely knocked off their Atlantic Division rivals, the Clemson Tigers, who will be replacing Deshaun Watson, who will be replacing Mike Williams, who will be replacing a ton of offensive talent, but they still return Christian Wilkins, they still return Dexter Lawrence, they still bring back a lot of talented players on the defensive side of the ball. Austin Bryant, also another one to watch, particularly on the defensive line. But, you know, number four has kind of been holding it down. Two-time ACC player of the year, and the conversation at Clemson is going to be about the quarterback spot. How do you think that that's going to break, and what do you have in terms of your expectations for the Clemson Tigers, now the defending champion Clemson Tigers?
Yeah, so we know Kelly Bryant's going to be the number one guy going into spring. He's been in the program the longest. He's going to get that first team rep, and he should. All signs point to it. It's Kelly Bryant, Zarek Cooper, and Hunter Johnson, who was the early enrollee five-star kid. Johnson, to me, is the most intriguing, because we talked about it right at the start. You get those freshmen in, and now, you know, with 7-on-7s and just the way football is anymore, it's all 24/7, 365. So if you couple what they get from before college, coming in early, getting the strength program early, getting the playbook, getting the spring reps, the transition is always hard, but it's a little bit easier now. And guys are more prepared to take on that challenge. And for me, Hunter Johnson, how quickly he picks things up is going to be interesting, because my personal philosophy is the longer a quarterback competition goes on, and I would not be stunned if that thing goes deep into preseason practice, the longer that thing goes on, my philosophy, play the young guy. Because he is where those older guys – he's close to where those older guys are, which means he's in theory, he's probably already ahead. So to me, Hunter Johnson, I'm not saying he wins the job, but I think he's the guy to watch in this whole thing. Deshaun Watson played as a freshman. It can be done. Clemson knows that better than anybody.
But he didn't start.
He didn't.
He didn't start game one. He took over in the middle of the season. It was Cole Stout at the start of the season. Deshaun Watson came in, dropped a dime on Georgia, and everybody was like, yo. And he ended up getting the starters reps, and he played for like 5 or 6 games, lit up Carolina, lit up State, then he got hurt. I would not be surprised if we see Bryant start the year and Johnson finish the year, if healthy and all those other things.
Yeah, I would say that seems reasonable. I just remember watching Cole Stout. And again, if you're a good coach, I think you learn. And each situation is different. You can't just make blind comparisons to stuff. But I think as coaches, if you are a good coach, clearly Dabo Swinney is, then you learn from your past situations. And I felt like there was the Cole Stout thing. He went out and played. You're like, oh boy, I don't think so. But you also have to make sure Deshaun Watson is ready, right? Like, you can't just throw a guy in there, even if long term he's better, if he's just not ready. So I'll just be interested to see how quickly Hunter Johnson really picks this thing up. Because if he's ready, I think you got to go with him right off the bat. If he's not, then yeah, I think you see more of like a Kelly Bryant starts things off, and then eventually Hunter Johnson kind of picks it up.
We'll see who starts, but I know what you need to be starting. You need to be starting the number one fresh ingredient and recipe delivery service in the country. That's right. We're talking about Blue Apron. And you can get this week's menu and get your first 3 meals free with free shipping by going to blueapron.com/SEC. That's right. By using the code SEC, blueapron.com/SEC, you can get in on some salmon piccata with orzo and broccoli, some pork chops with miso butter and bok choy and marinated apples, and spicy shrimp coconut curry with cabbage and rice. These are great, great menu ingredients, and these are the best ingredients that you can find anywhere. And you can get them by going to blueapron.com/SEC. That's right. 3 meals free, free shipping, blueapron.com/SEC. You'll love how good it feels and tastes to create incredible home-cooked meals with Blue Apron, so don't wait. blueapron.com/SEC. Notre Dame started spring practice this week, or at least in the past week, and it's really brought back the spotlight to the Irish because they sort of fell into the shadows after finishing the season 4-8, and there is no shortage of expectations because you don't go 4-8 at Notre Dame. You don't do that. We've got Deshaun Kizer off to the NFL. We've got Malik Zaire transferring out. Brandon Wimbush is the starter. We shouldn't have any kind of quarterback competition or quarterback controversy going into this spring or this fall. Like, this is pretty much set up. But, man, I'm looking around, and Notre Dame has been a top 15, top 20 team recruiting talent-wise over the last 4 to 5 years, but they haven't been top 10 consistently, and I don't know, and we're going to get to this. This is actually kind of a funny theme. I don't know a lot of the Notre Dame roster right now, and it doesn't give me a whole lot of confidence that this is going to be a 10-win season for them.
And I just pulled it up. Let me tell you who they play. Georgia. SEC East favorites. You got to go to North Carolina. You got to play USC. You got to go to Miami. Got to play Navy. you got to go to Stanford. Remember how last year we were like, if for no other reason we liked Notre Dame because they played like three road games?
Yeah.
And it was against like Boston College or something like that. Like, you look at, and you got to go to Michigan State, who should be better. Like, you look at that and you go, holy crap, like Notre Dame actually has to play a lot of tough teams. And it's not like they stacked them all like early or late or something like that, but it's evenly spread out. I think you're 100% right about the star power at Notre Dame. Not really there. And they had a really bad D-line last year. Like, they had no sacks. They were really bad at sacks. I think they had like 14 the whole season or something like that. They had no pass rush. They were giving up rushing yards. I mean, that didn't even really change after Brian Van Gorder got fired. So if you don't have a good D-line, that sets you just up for total failure on defense. You're breaking in a new quarterback. I look at Notre Dame. I think they will be better because not much worse you can do than 4-8. I mean, you can do worse, but I don't know that they will do much worse than 4-8. But I'm with you. I don't think this is 9 or 10 wins unless they totally surprise us. I think this is you get back to a bowl game, and I think that keeps Brian Kelly going because he showed that ability to reinvent himself, which Sports Illustrated covered pretty well this past week. Total reinventing himself, but I don't know that that's the kind of transition where it just happens right away. Because you're right about Notre Dame's recruiting. It's been good. It's like top 15-ish, but they're not on the same level as Alabama and Florida State and Ohio State. They're not. Not even Michigan.
Right, right, right. And that's the thing is that right now in the talent tiers, I see them as probably tier two, and they're just not up there. Collecting the kind of talent. And a team like Clemson, for example, that we just talked about, is like a tier two but bridging into tier one kind of team.
They're like 1B.
Yeah, 1.5.
They're like 1.5. Now, I think with a national championship, that might bump them up a little bit. But they want to – like the general rule of thumb is you got to be what? Top five, top 10-ish, you know, to compete, let alone win national title. And Clemson was like right there at 11. Like, I think if you look at their average over the past 4 or 5 years, it was like 11.
Right. They were the lowest in 6 years.
Yeah.
Lowest at 11.
Yeah.
Yeah. You gotta be recruiting at a ridiculous level to actually get out here and win these ships. Speaking of recruiting at a ridiculous level, the Michigan Wolverines lose everybody. Dog, I don't know any Michigan Wolverine. I mean, Rashawn Gary, and who else is going to be real sick from this upcoming class?
I'm with you. That was funny. We were getting ready to do this pod. I'm like, man, I hope Chip doesn't ask me to start naming off Wolverines.
Oh, yeah.
I can't do it.
I sent you in the rundown. The conversation topic was, I don't know many Michigan Wolverines. I think this is the most fascinating aspect of the spring for the Big Ten, because you've got like, I think they had a 33 player senior class, or at least like 33 players leave, 33 scholarship players leave. I mean, it is almost half the roster is turning over, and I think that could be a good thing in terms of you know, these are all going to be Jim Harbaugh's guys. They will have all bought into the insanity, and everybody knows how close they were a year ago. You know, the Iowa game, you know, just they played really poorly, but it was decided, you know, fractions of yards and kicks and decisions. And then, of course, the Ohio State game with the spot was good.
Right.
You know, I'm looking at Michigan, knowing that there was all this bubbling potential, but it's going to be young. It's going to be hungry. I look at Michigan as a team that probably could beat anyone. And again, this is after already admitting that I don't know many Michigan Wolverines, but I know the way they've been recruiting, and I can pull up their roster, and I will say, they can probably get it together and beat Ohio State or anybody else, or Penn State or anybody else on their roster. I just don't know if I'm going to be expecting the consistency that it requires to win 11 or 12 games in the regular season.
So when Harbaugh took over and he landed, that first recruiting class was not bad. It was small, and there was so much uncertainty from the end of the Brady Hoke era. You kind of have to throw that one out the window. Then he got his second recruiting class, which started to get into that top five area. And when Harbaugh took over, I mean, he had some talent. I mean, there's always some talent at Michigan, but you go, his best players aren't on the roster yet. And that's with guys like Jabril Peppers and Jordan Lewis and Jake Butt. Like, his best players aren't there yet. They're going to get there. So I think this is the year where you start seeing those better players really emerge and make a name for themselves. You already mentioned Rashawn Gary. That's about the guy that I know. And he did. He had an impact as a freshman. I think he's going to have a much bigger presence this time around. He played in all 13 games. He's going to be the starter this time. So you'll have a presence along the D-line, which you need. Michigan's toughest games, I'm pretty sure, are towards the end of the season. Because you get Ohio State, I think they have to go to Wisconsin. I think they have to go to Penn State, if I'm not mistaken. So their tougher games, I think, are going to be towards the end of the year. The good thing is if you have a young team, that offers you the ability to gel a little bit and hit your stride at the end of the year. I think Michigan's still 9-10 wins, and then you set yourself up for 2018 going like, all right, this is really like you're going to get peak Harbaugh in about a year.
What about the rest of the Big Ten East? Because Saquon Barkley is just going to be – has been and will continue to be our crush at CBS Sports. And Trace McSorley obviously got it cooking near the end of the year. Penn State's just juiced right now. I mean, probably a top 10 team in the polls. Ohio State is, we assume, like maybe about to come out here and win the Big Ten again. Is it possible? Like, are there no down years for Ohio State? Like, how do you see this division breaking? Because again, this 9-game Big Ten schedule, I don't know if we're going to see a team go undefeated in the Big Ten here for a minute, just because the competition is so strong. So it's going to end up being these, you know, one-loss tiebreaker scenarios that decides it. And I feel like Penn State and Ohio State are going to be right there in the mix, and it'll come down to who wins the head-to-head.
Yeah, probably. Michigan State, I think, is going to be better this year because they played so many young guys at the end of last season, and I don't figure Mark D'Antonio for a guy who stays down for too long. So I think you're talking about four teams right there at the top who are good to very, very good or great. Ohio State, it's so funny because last year I said, I think the Buckeyes are going to take a step back. Well, their step back was 12-2 and going to the college football playoff. But if you really look at that team, I think Urban Meyer was right when he's like, you know, the team I think is just a year away from being really complete. Now, winning 12 games in a quote-unquote down year is still a hell of a luxury. Ohio State's got to do a couple things, but I think they have the capability to do it. Got to replace their secondary, which I think they will. I don't necessarily see that being an issue. I think they'll reload there. Got to do a little bit better with pass protection. I think they have the guys coming back to do it. They have veteran guys. My biggest question mark is who's going to catch passes for that team? Because you start thinking about the names on Ohio State. Like, we know JT Barrett. We know Weber running back. We know Sam Hubbard, who, my God, I'm like already crushing on this dude so hard. Like, I think he's going to be a monster for them off the edge. But you look at Ohio State and you go, man, where are the dudes?
Yeah.
There just isn't one right now. Like, there are some names that are kind of popping up. Like, hey, watch out for KJ Hill this year. You're like, who's KJ Hill? Like, you need a guy. Because last year you had Curtis Samuel, but he was an H-back. Like, he's not the true Mike Thomas sort of guy on the outside. Like, they need – they just don't have a guy there. And they have to have a guy, I think, if they're going to take that next step from kind of lucky that they got into the college football playoff, in my opinion, to a team that can actually compete for a national championship.
You are based in Austin. And – the thing that is fascinating to me is that this is another, you know, we talked about Alabama earlier, how I kind of felt like I was caught off guard. Shane Buechel is not necessarily, the starter, the Texas QB1. Tom Herman goes out, recruits right over him, brings in blue chip quarterback Sam Ellinger, and now all of a sudden we've got a QB competition. What is, first of all, your thoughts on the quarterbacks, but just also in general, like what's the vibe around Tom Herman's Texas program? Because He was the most sought after quarterback, you know, I mean, not quarterback, most sought after head coach for a minute. And he lands at Texas. And this is, you know, friggin' Texas. So what do you think is going to be the general feeling and expectation going into a season where, you know, I think that they could have a very nice 8-win season, and I don't know if very nice 8-win season is going to be as exciting as what Texas fans are looking for in Tom Herman.
So first of all, with Tom Herman, we say like he was the hot coaching guy. Like, he was Texas's coach before he was Texas's coach.
Yeah.
Like, that was just the thing where, and I like Charlie Strong and all that, and I was a pretty big defender of him. That was one of those things where I was like, you know what, maybe let's just call this one a day and just go ahead and move on, because Texas already had their eyes on him. Like, this has been a thing in the making for a really long time. So, but now that it's actually here, you know, I've been following the Texas coverage lately. I just don't know that anyone knows what to make of this team, because they've been in this situation before where it's like, all right, the talent's there, but it just hasn't produced for one reason or another. And I just don't know that anyone – it's too early to tell about what Tom Herman's really going to make of this team. Now, as for the quarterback situation, Shane Bichelle was good. He was a good freshman. He did about as well, I think, reasonably as you can expect any freshman to do, coming right in and playing right away. Sim Ellinger got a stronger arm than him. He can really push the ball down the field. Now, Texas receivers have struggled with drops, but they have some guys who can push it deep. And I wonder if Ellinger can just spin it and just kind of put it on a rope a little bit further down the field than Shane Bichelle can. And so I think it's absolutely no competition. Again, Sam comes in, early enrollee, getting in the strength program. I think he's a little bit bigger than Shane Bichelle is. So I think it's absolutely a competition that goes into the fall. You know what? I wouldn't even put it past Herman if he kind of tries them both out just a little bit early on in the season, because I think you got a couple kids who they're young, they're hungry to compete, they want to start. I think you throw them into the fire and see what they do when the bullets are flying.
He is Ben Kercheval. You can follow him on Twitter at Ben Kercheval, and he is absolutely crushing spring practice coverage right now. Ben, thank you so much for jumping on the SEC on CBS podcast. We'll be sure to catch up soon.
Thank you.